Dr. John Duffy joins us, as he does from time to time, clinical psychologist, best-selling author. His book, The Available Parent, are available wherever better books are sold. John, we could have used you yesterday. There was a discussion on the show. There was a woman who wrote a book about how best to deal with your child if they have weight issues, if they're underweight or overweight.
Right.
And is there or is there not a proper way to address that? And we had some callers call in and some texters text in. I said in a lot of cases, I believe, especially with a younger kid, that if the child has some sort of weight issues, you almost have to blame the parent. And then we had a listener call up very upset saying, I'm tired of taking the blame. I don't want to take the blame. Her child was 21 at this point, which
different
is
story.
A lot
different
older
story,
than I
right?
was talking
okay.
about.
Yep.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I think with younger kids, you know, the idea is you want to teach them good habits, right? So you want them out and about as much as they can be out and about and running around and, you know, kind of like a lot of us lived when we were younger, and eating really healthy foods. A lot of us expect our kids to kind of rise to the occasion of being really healthy when we have a bunch of junk in, you know, in the cupboards. And so I think we have to model that for them too, right? You mm-hmm. know, and I talk about modeling in here a lot, but it's really critically important. If you're sitting on a couch as a parent and you're eating chips and watching TV and you're like, get out of the house and start eating some salads to your kids, it's probably not going to happen.
Right.
They're going to follow what you do instead of what you say. So modeling's a big part of it, and just encouraging him, like, you know, get out of the house and without even blaming anybody, just, you know, from where we are now, do a hard reset. Hey, I expect you to be out of the house for a few hours a day, out there having fun with your friends.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe you can do, we'll do one junk food meal a week, and then the rest of the time I expect you to eat well.
And, I mean, I said instead of, like, necessarily blaming the parent, if the parents are or kids are still living at home, the parent can just not say anything but start preparing healthier meals.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know
it
I
can
mean?
Be seamless, right?
I because, mean, you know, growing up as battling weight on and off my whole life, you know, my mom, I was telling Bill off the air, my mom used to tell me, you know how when you're eating something, you bite the side of your cheek?
Yeah.
It happens to everyone. My mom's like, oh, that only happens when you've put on a little weight.
Oh, no.
So that,
wow.
doesn't work,
that's
you know? It's
right.
like, you know, when you're fat, you know you're fat. If
right,
somebody
right, right.
says something, you kind of like get mad and then you'll go eat.
Yeah, I think it gets down to the shaming thing, right? You want to eliminate
yeah.
shaming, right? And you want to be as constructive as you can moving forward, right? You don't talk about the past. You talk about like, okay, let's establish new habits going forward. And to your point, Wendy, sometimes you don't even have to say it. Sometimes you just like start buying different food and you might get a little attitude like, hey, where are the chips? Yeah, we're not buying chips this summer, you know? And then you just kind of move on from that and you might
right.
get a little bit of attitude, but we all get a little bit of attitude. Not the end of the world.
When I was growing up, John, we had a bathroom scale. There was a scale in our bathroom, and you'd weigh yourself every day or every other day.
Right.
And when we bought our house, we had a bathroom scale. And then as my daughters got into, I guess, middle school, maybe fifth, sixth, seventh grade, the scale was gone. And I said to my wife, where'd the scale go? And she goes, you don't have a scale in the bathroom with teenage daughters. Or at that point, they weren't even teenagers yet. But she said, that's the worst thing in the world for a girl to look at a scale
even
every
for
day.
A boy, Bill. It's not just girls. Boys have weight issues now, too.
Oh, I definitely know that. But it never would. Like, I needed somebody to explain that to me because
yep, yep.
I didn't know that.
I think a lot of us don't know that. And yet it is really, really important because kids, boys and girls earlier than boys, I think, focus on that number, right? And will gauge their self-worth based on that number. I was talking to a girl this week who's a teenager who was gauging her self-worth on how she looked in a bathing suit that she admitted and her mother said very clearly was ill-fitting, like didn't suit her. And
yeah.
yet she was talking about this like, ooh, I can pinch this little tiny bit on my side. And if she had a scale in her bathroom, she would be devastated. It would, yeah, absolutely devastated. And there is no metric that would feel okay to her. That's the scary, slippery slope of it all, is it's not like, you know, if there were 3 pounds less or 5 pounds less, I would feel better. Oftentimes, once you lose the five, you think, well, if I lost 10 more, I'd feel even better than that. And
right.
then you get into a problem.
And you can take five people, male and female, line them up in a police lineup. They can all weigh the same, but they look completely different.
Absolutely.
So you can't base everything on weight.
Right. No, you can't. And a lot of it has, because their muscles heavier than fat and things like that. But for parents, I think the point ought to be, have something to do with more than just weight, more like self-acceptance, like, yeah. you know, like broadly speaking, you know, do you like yourself? Do you like the way your body looks? Is there something you can do about it? Can you get some exercise? Can you do something different so that you feel incrementally better? Not that you have to look like a model from a magazine.
Right. That's
but
impossible.
Something that makes you feel right. It's totally impossible. That's yeah. part of the problem. We all know that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. The author of this book, and I wish I could remember the title. I'm sorry I don't remember the title, but she said that one of the last things you ever want to do is say,
I'm like so fat or something.
That's it. I'm like so fat. Is it? Was wow. the name of the title.
Which, very good. I don't like the title, but she's...
But she said one of the worst things you could do is say, look at your sister. Why can your sister do this and you can't in terms of weight?
Worst thing
but
ever.
I would imagine with other things too.
With just about anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The comparisons between siblings, because everyone's got their own set of strengths, right? And challenges, and to make those comparisons, especially about weight, devastating. I mean, self-esteem crushing, and it's not going to do anything to change the weight. In fact, to Wendy's point and to your point, an overweight child might be inclined, because they're maybe comfort eating, to eat more, not less, to make that problem more prominent for themselves.
And is the food usually a masking of some other problem, usually, or
almost
is that not
always?
The case? It is.
Yeah, right. I mean, one thing we learned in my profession really early on is it's rarely food. It's never food. You know what I mean? Almost always it's about something else, but it manifests in this kind of comfort eating.
Yeah. Isn't that why smoking happens, and drug use and alcohol use? And the difference with the food is, if you quit drinking or smoking or doing drugs, you don't ever have to do it again. With food, you have to eat every day.
Exactly. Food is the one thing. Like, you know, you could add internet behavior and, you know, and porn use and a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah,
but
I got to work on my porn use.
That's what I'm getting at.
Just during work hours, Wendy. When you're home,
well,
it's your own free time.
I don't
time,
want my
but...
kids to check my history. All I don't right. care if my bosses do.
I think that's better.
Susan has a question or comment. This is Dr. John Duffy, and your website is, John?
DrJohnDuffy.com.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Wendy and Bill. Love your show.
Thank you.
Dr. Duffy, I have a question. I have a daughter, 16, been struggling with depression her entire life. Been in therapy, actually, most of her life, on meds. She's currently in a program for CBT, and she is just... We're not getting anywhere.
Right.
My husband does not participate. He doesn't understand. And he does make comments that kind of make things worse, and makes comments and about her eating, you know, oh, my God, you're going to eat that. And she's thin and she's beautiful, but inside.
Can I jump in for one second?
Sad.
And I may be off base here, but in my own opinion, in experiences in my family and friends, is it a pride thing for men where they're sometimes hard to comprehend, like, oh, just suck it up and man up, or they're hard to believe that there's an underlying issue sometimes? Is that a true
I think
statement?
It's a fair statement. I think we men and fathers are slower on the uptake. I think oftentimes we take it personally when our kids are struggling, and so there's this little bit of like, oh, come on, just be less depressed. You have a beautiful life that we provided you, and just shake it off. And I don't know if that's what you're dealing with specifically, Susan, but, you know, program-wise, it sounds like you're doing everything right, like everything I can think of that I would suggest that you do in terms of, you know, CBT and getting a medication evaluation. It sounds like you've done all of those things. Your daughter's been in therapy for a long time, so... If your husband's the factor, the most important thing might be to get him into the therapy room, probably alone, before he's in there with you and with your daughter, so that he can work through his feelings about this a little bit. Because if he is resistant to it, there is no way that your savvy 16-year-old daughter is going to miss the point of that.
Well, she knows it. And he's
sure.
been in therapy for, you know, a few times here and there. And he, if, you know... Wendy, I know you've talked about this quite a bit, and I appreciate that. And I think it's great that you open up on air, but he's not willing to go there. I mean, like, you know, he'll physically go there, but he's not willing to open up about anything that he has an issue with himself.
Right.
So if,
and it's not just men. There are some women that will not do it either. And how you can't force someone into going to therapy, John. How do you...
You can't. The trick, and I hate to use that word, but I kind of mean it. The trick, Susan, might be to talk to him about not what he needs to do better and what he's doing wrong, but more how do we as parents best serve our daughter, right? You know, like, so she's struggling and we're on different pages, so maybe you and I need to get and sit in front of somebody and get on the same page so that we are supporting her in the same way, because if she's getting any mixed messages, it's probably prolonging this depressive issue for her. That might be the pitch that gets movement in your family where you feel stuck.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Good luck to you, Susan. It's tough, and you're a great mom.
Thanks, Wendy. Thanks, Dr. Duffy. And you too, Bill.
Oh, thanks,
you make
Susan.
Me laugh as
oh,
well.
I appreciate it. Good luck with all this, Susan. We're pulling
great.
For you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
We'll take a quick break. More with Dr. John Duffy in just a little bit. If you have a question or a comment, easy to reach us at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Dr. John Duffy in the studio with us, clinical psychologist, author of a great book called The Available Parent, certified life coach. You're really a run-of-the-mill guy, a man of many hats.
Well, thank you.
Someone has texted something in, and it's kind of interesting. That earlier caller, Susan, had mentioned that both parents weren't on board with the difficulties that their daughter was experiencing.
Right.
This is on the same line. My son was recently diagnosed with autism. My mother is in great denial of this. When she tells people that he has autism, she immediately follows it up with, "But I think they misdiagnosed him," and she won't stop doing it. I told her time and time again that she's not a doctor and that she needs to stop telling people that he is misdiagnosed, because he's not. I've given her literature, websites to go to. Nothing is helping me to get her to realize the truth. How do I help her understand that autism is not a life sentence? And these days, how do I help her understand that people can live a very fruitful and meaningful life with autism?
You know, I think the tricky thing to start is to acknowledge how she's feeling, how grandma's feeling, right? Because that child's life will probably be different than what grandma pictured, right? I mean, it might be markedly different, because autism is a spectrum disorder, and so it can go anywhere from mild to moderate to severe, and I don't know where this child is on that spectrum, but to acknowledge, like, I get that this is really, really hard for you to wrap your brain around. But to your point, Wendy, autism itself doesn't have to be a dirty word. Historically, it is. And we feel like, oh, boy, that is some kind of a life sentence, and there's nothing we can do about it. But right now, there are so many different treatments for different spots on the spectrum. And if she can get on board and recognize, okay, if I'm on board, then we can start to work toward managing it and managing it well. I should point out, I've worked with a number of autistic children, and you know, shame on me. I can think of one young man I worked with. I started working with him about 5 years ago, and I thought, ooh, he's really going to be limited in what he can do. And he is this close to graduating from high school.
Oh, great.
Socially, he has come around to the point where it's almost imperceptible. And 5 years ago, it looked like he was really, really bad off socially. So I want to give your texter hope that this will change, and to give that grandmother hope that this can all change. But the faster she gets on board and recognizes, okay, this is a legitimate diagnosis, but let's work within it, then they'll get somewhere with it.
And there's a bunch of celebrities. Was it Dan Aykroyd that just came out saying that he's somewhere in the autism spectrum? Director Tim Burton, Daryl Hannah, Courtney Love. I mean, all these people, it's like now we know what it is. And in fairness to grandparents, it wasn't around then.
Nope.
I mean, I guess it was around then, but we didn't know what it was. So grandparents sometimes say, you know, oh, they're just boys will be boys. There's no issue going on, because it wasn't going on that we were aware of back when they were parents.
It's true. And there's so much more information, maybe too much these days, but there's a lot more information about all of these disorders. And so I think a lot of parents feel like, ooh, our kids are getting flooded with all these diagnoses and what's legitimate and what's not. And I can imagine a grandparent thinking, there might just be an element of social awkwardness there that he's going to grow out of. I can certainly imagine thinking that. But if there are professionals saying this is a legitimate diagnosis, then I think you have to defer to those professionals and work within that diagnosis.
Do you remember, John Travolta and Kelly Preston's son, Jet, was autistic, but they would never say that until after he died.
You're right.
And then they would talk about his autism, but while he was alive, and I don't know if that was just them convincing themselves that he wasn't autistic, or they just thought it was better to not refer
right.
to him.
Shield him from ridicule from others, maybe.
Right, yeah, right, right.
I don't know.
I do feel like with autism or any disorder of any kind, I think the more open we are to talking about it, the less taboo
Amen.
There is around it, right? I mean, no matter what it is, whether it's ADHD, whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, or whether it's autism, the more we talk about it, the less taboo it is, and the more it's kind of like we can kind of collectively work toward it. And then it's easier to get schools on board to help out with it, and educators and administrators and people in neighborhoods, you know, to recognize, oh, okay, this is what we're dealing with. What can we do to help, you
right.
know? But if we're clandestine about it, then I think we create shame
yeah.
in the child who's suffering something they can't do anything about.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes both my kids have ADHD, and in varying degrees. It's not like just a blanket statement, ADHD. Different kids are affected differently. And I remember when they first started school, Jim and I were scared to tell the school about it. Because it's like, we don't want this to be on their record. But then we realized we can get some extra help in various areas of school, and it's changed our lives because we have brought it up. And it's not that uncommon. My kids aren't the only kids going into the nurse's office at noon to take a pill.
Oh, man, are they not, right? I mean, like, right, the nurse's office is flooded at noon with kids
Absolutely.
Who need to take a pill for one thing or another. And so I think that you're right. I think you're handling it really, really well by being open about it. And I think the more we do that, and most disorders, you know, we talk about autism and Asperger's as spectrum disorders. But if you think about ADHD and you talk about your boys, that's a spectrum issue as well, right? Not mm-hmm. everybody suffers any disorder the same way. And that might give this grandmother a little comfort, too, is that it doesn't make her grandson any less unique or
right.
any less an individual or any less who he is just because he carries this diagnosis. And there are things we can do about it once we get behind it.
Excellent advice, as per usual. Check out Dr. John Duffy's podcast at WGNplus.com. Also on your website, drjohnduffy.com. Very fascinating. The young adults that you counsel and their openness to talk about their issues is an eye-opener.
I agree. I take very little credit for it. I'm blown away by how open they are, how much they want to help people who are
That's
listening.
That's what it is. They yeah. do want to help other people's. And even if it's not something you're dealing with, one of the topics may be, and it gets you thinking, and boy, kids are smart today.
Man, are kids smart. Right. Yeah. So I think I'm going to bring the wisdom. Hardly ever.
John, thank you. If you want to see or hear the podcast, you could look at them, but you won't see anything. You want to hear them. That's the best way to hear a podcast. WGN Plus is your source. Thank you, John. We appreciate it. That's Dr. John Duffy. We'll take a quick break and then more show after Ryan's News. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.